This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Right now, the coach's son is going to dribble out his dad's championship. 76-59.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Every dog has his day, and this day belongs to the Huskies.
Earlier on the show, ESPN college basketball analyst Jay Billis, ESPN senior NBA writer Brian Windhorst. Coming up, two-time Academy Award winner Ben Affleck. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
We should have had her announce herself as a guest on the program. That was the voice of the Rich Eisen Show, Aaron Sheehan. She just hung up from being on this show because we had to have her on as a guest because she nailed the Final Four and the final game and the final result, but didn't have her pool in something where it could be worth money.
That is painful, man.
And the craziest Final Four ever. Yeah. She nailed all four of them and the results. You know, she had San Diego State obviously beating Florida Atlantic. That almost didn't happen. As we know, they needed a buzzer beater to make that happen.
And anyone thinking what we saw wasn't real, we got a shot of her Sweet 16. And all those teams, like, this isn't something that's made up. This was real. She really picked these teams.
Hour number one, we had Jay Billis fresh off of the national championship game, talking about the national championship game from a golf course. We even heard him hit a shot at the end of our interview. That's a Rich Eisen Show first. He's like, now listen to me hit this shot.
And he looked good doing it.
And he said it was magnificent was the word he used. Hour number two, Brian Windhorst. What a great conversation about what might be wrong with the Mavs and what is wrong with the Mavs and Luka and Kyrie and the Lakers prospects. A great soup to nuts preview of the last week of the NBA season leading to the play-in tournament in the playoffs. If you missed it, we re-air on the Roku channel, channel 210. And then there's our podcast. There's youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. We slice a bunch of these videos up, put it out there every single day for you to consume worldwide. There's also the Rich Eisen Show collection page, part of our Roku channel relationship. It's a video on demand service. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. We will take your phone calls before the end of the show. Ben Affleck's going to be joining us, the director of the movie Air, coming up in about 18 minutes time. Susie Schuster is in Chris Brockman's spot for the final hour of this show. She's been with us all day today as Chris is with family. And it's now time for a news update. I believe we have a drop for that, right, Mike? Hit it.
And now, with a report of the day's news from the world of sports and entertainment,
it's Susie Schuster.
Fantastic. All right, what do you got over there, Seuss? What do you got?
Can we get Dr. Spaceman back on? Can we just please get Chris Parnell back on?
I would love to. Anytime.
First up is, what else? Tiger Woods about to play in his 25th Masters. 25th Masters. And he was asked a question this morning that the whole world is wondering. Let's roll that back.
When you're playing this course, does it ever cross your mind this could be the last time?
Yes, it has. I didn't know. I mean, last year was kind of didn't know if I was going to play again at that time. For some reason, everything kind of came together, and I kind of pushed it a little bit, and I was able to make the cut, which was nice. And I don't know how many more I have in me. So just to be able to appreciate the time that I have here and cherish the memories.
Wow. 25 Masters. I cannot believe that Tiger Woods is playing in his 25th Masters.
Right.
Do you remember where you were when you saw him the first time?
I don't. 25 years ago would be what? I was probably on, you know, in Bristol meeting you in the newsroom.
Yeah.
You know, and he was just one of the biggest superstars prior to being professional that you could think of. He was up there with LeBron and anybody else who you were seeing coming up. Wow. And of course he's sitting there thinking of his own mortality. No question about it. I would love for him to make the cut again. I know Brockman is sitting there thinking he's going to actually be in contention on Sunday wearing red. That would be something obviously everybody would love to see.
Yeah.
That just made me feel old. Tiger thinking of his own Masters mortality, playing in his 25th Masters. He was a baby when he first started.
And I'm sure you know that car wreck had a lot to do with that, too. That
Yeah.
Brought the mortality to the front of his head.
I'm just thankful that our kids know who he is and have seen him win the Masters. We're lucky. What else you got over there, Suze?
A lot of talk about Dr. Jill Biden inviting Iowa and LSU to the White House this week in the aftermath of the championship game, which I thought was amazing, and I'm all for female trash talk, but that's really no shocker.
Yeah.
So a couple bites and a couple Twitter
the old Twitter?
What do you call them, tweets?
Yeah, sure.
Let's face it. I mean, you know me and Twitter. We have a love-hate relationship, as in I love to hate reading your Twitter feed.
Yes.
So anyway, let's show a couple bites, a couple tweets out there. Jill Biden, obviously, a lot of pushback, but Angel Reese saying this is a joke. This is a joke because, as you pointed out, the winners go to the White House.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, Rich, how you feel about that.
Well, I mean, you know, the First Lady said that, you know, she was at the game and she was particularly appreciative of the competition and how Iowa played, and mentioned how she's going to mention to the president that he should invite Iowa as well, and she looks forward to seeing LSU at the White House. And clearly, you know, Angel Reese heard that and took it the way a lot of people took it, the way I took it, is that she wanted both to come together at the same time. And, you know, I heard that and I thought that was absurd, quite frankly. And I thought that is something that should not happen. I have no problem if Iowa did go to the White House. I have no problem that Dr. Biden wants to celebrate their season. I also thought for a split moment, because I'm a little bit jaded in the world sometimes, Iowa is a very important part of the primaries when one is running for president, that it wouldn't be bad to get in with the good old Hawkeye Nation to welcome them to the White House and honor them in advance of, you know, something in 2024 that might not be a playing season. But her, if I'm not mistaken, her spokesperson clarified matters today, saying the First Lady loved watching the championship game alongside student athletes and admires how far women have advanced in sports since the passing of Title IX. Her comments in Colorado, where she made them, were intended to applaud the historic game and all women athletes. She looks forward to celebrating the LSU Tigers on their championship win at the White House. So they'll just let this die down. LSU hopefully will go to the White House. And then Iowa should show up later if that is something they want to do.
I was going to ask you, so how would you feel then if Iowa went at a later date? Because that hasn't happened in men's sports. Is this a double standard?
That hasn't happened in any sport.
Period.
No.
It hasn't. So, would you have an issue if Iowa then went at a later date?
I guess there's nothing more American than saying what I'm about to say. The losers shouldn't go to the White House. I'm sorry. Does that sound terrible? Does it sound bad?
Hey,
I mean, like the winners of a championship go to the White House. They're invited to go, and it's up to them if they wish to attend. And I would hope that they would. But that was, again, the fact that LSU beats Iowa and the idea was put forth. And for a split moment, I truly thought she did mean they should all be together. Yeah. And I thought to myself, that is absurd, for the lack of a better phrase. That is not what, this is not what we do.
Is it like the equivalent of trophies for everybody? Is that what you're...
That'd be like the participation trophy, which everyone hates. So, you know.
My children aren't disappointed. They like a little trophy.
Well, you know, children?
Most people are always like
our
participation
children.
Trophies.
Oh, by the way,
TJ,
you do
his
that all the time. Our children, as you know, Susie.
Did you know that, TJ? They're his children.
Oh, my God.
He did a lot of the work, let's be honest.
Isn't it so crazy?
Oh, my gosh.
It's like Handmaid's Tale over
if
here.
Iowa shows up separately, then, you know, congratulations to them. If she wants to honor them, you know, it would be weird. Not going to lie, but if it's something that would show off sportsmanship or whatever, I have no problem with it. You want to spend a day doing that? I'm sure Iowa would love to show up there, and I'm sure they'd love to show up in Iowa and say, see, Hawkeyes, We are for you and the Biden family.
I took Rich as a plus one time when the Angels won the World Series.
Basketball feet.
Yeah.
We heard that a few weeks ago that he was a professional plus one with you. Yeah. You took him everywhere.
I did. It's exhausting.
You opened every door. Without you, there is no Rich Eisen show. We wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation while he's listening to us.
It was amazing. Without you. Susie, you were covering the Angels after they won it.
Yeah, the Angels invited me to come.
W had everyone to the White House. And you went into the Oval Office, and I got in there too.
Yeah,
and I got in.
And we have a great picture of us with Bush Jr.
Hold on a minute.
Did Bush 43?
You got in.
Not wave
in
me in personally.
He did.
Thank
it
you.
Was big time. I wrote his coattails
in there. Because I was on SportsCenter and he recognized me.
He thought you were Susie's security. Let's be honest. He thought you were Susie's security.
And here we are. We're about to take this great picture with the president.
He couldn't have been
warmer.
And
then Rich's former agent's wife sneaks into the middle of the picture. So we have this great picture of the two of us with Junior and his former agent's wife.
Well, you can Photoshop that out.
Maybe we can.
We could, actually.
There's technology.
W and Laura Bush could not have been warmer.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a question.
But
now,
they didn't have the Giants to the White House.
Nope.
Is San Diego State, do they get to go if that's the case?
Oh, my gosh.
I don't believe this was her intention.
Let's just be honest. I do not believe this was her intention. And they are trying to put the fire out here. And what I would probably think is we're going to move on. And then at some point, LSU hopefully will be at the White House. It will be great.
And Joe did put out a tweet. Shortly afterwards,
okay,
saying I'm looking forward to welcoming LSU to the White House.
Terrific. What else you got
over there? We'll see what their coach wears to the White House.
Yes.
Something
special. What else you got
over
there? What else is on your list, your hit list there?
Jalen Carter. A lot of talk. Drew Rosenhaus telling all of prospective teams, if you're not in the top 10, don't bother knocking on our door.
How about that?
How do you feel about that?
Well, he told Adam Schefter they're only taking in-person visits with top 10 teams.
Mm-hmm. Taking the Deion route with that, right?
It's very Zava. Very, very Zava.
Well,
we got Zava. Kind of like what Dion said, though, Rich. If the Giants wanted him to come in?
This was back in the day when there were interviews at the combine and they weren't scheduled. It would be a free for all where coaches and scouts would pull a prospect into their meeting room and you didn't know who was pulling you in until they said, hey, we're with the Giants. And so Dion would walk in, we pulled into a room and say, do y'all have a top 5 pick? And they would say no. And he goes, I'm out of here. You're not getting me.
It was factual.
And when I heard this, because, you know, Jalen Carter, as we all know, at the combine, had to leave the combine to face charges in Georgia and then returned to the combine and told everyone that he's going to be working this thing out and he's innocent. And that's, we've seen that before. And we've also heard how he's been removed off of draft boards after his pro day, which was patently disappointing. For you to have a poor pro day where people are talking about whether you're in shape or not, or whether you're committed or not, that's really tough. Because your pro day is set up for you to succeed. You're on your home campus. You got your coaches. It's all scripted. For you to not look good and leave people walking away going, what's up with that, is rare. The only other one that I recall was Teddy Bridgewater had a poor pro day. So Drew Rosenhaus doing Drew Rosenhaus things, which is getting out there, getting a word out there, fighting a PR battle, knowing that teams read stuff, hear stuff. Everyone talks, everyone says things. And then all of a sudden, your player falls down draft boards. And he's now saying, hey, we're not visiting teams outside of the top 10. So if you think we're falling out of the top 10, you're out of your mind. Because the way we're thinking about it is if you're falling, you've fallen out of Jalen Carter if you're not in the top 10. You're saying we're falling out of the top 10? Well, guess what? If you're not in the top 10, you've fallen out of Jalen Carter's market. And you could say that's all well and good. But this is also a guy, when Willis McGahee had a knee injury, was sitting next to him on the couch on draft night knowing the cameras were on him. He popped on the phone, making it look like he's making deals for Willis McGahee to be drafted in the first round. And he wasn't talking to anybody.
Oh, really?
He did that on purpose. Make it look like stuff's happening, which is what an agent is supposed to do. And the reason, when I saw this today, I'm like, let's talk about it, because this is exactly what Lamar Jackson is missing. I should be hearing, you know who's interested in Lamar? This, that, the other thing. You know what Lamar's doing right now? He's taking this visit. He's going to this spot. Do you know where Lamar is right now? He's in Vegas, and he's not there to go see a show. You know what he's doing? He's in New England, and he's not going there to visit Cheers.
Lamar!
You know, like, that's the sort of stuff. Like, put Lamar Jackson front row at a Celtics game.
Next to Meek Mill.
This is what you need to do. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Why not put him front row whenever the Celtics and the Sixers play each other? Do they play each other over the next week? In the final week of the season? Do me a favor. That, look that up.
He needs, like, crisis management.
He needs to be put out there.
You know, who's the Washington? Remember Kerry Washington played some kind of, like, fixer-type person in Scandal or whatever? He needs, like, one of those type people to come in there.
He needs an Olivia Pope.
That's what it was. Didn't watch the show. But anyway, he needs that to come in.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that Jalen Carter, the word on the street is he's fallen. Team's taken off the draft board, and he's fallen out of the top 10. And an agent, Drew Rosenhaus, tells Adam Schefter, well, guess what? You're falling out of Jalen Carter if you're not in the top 10. And suddenly you're talking, and it changes the narrative, and that does matter. It really does.
Sixers Celtics tonight. I just wanted to confirm
this
that.
This is what needs to be done. Meek Mill, where is it?
Is it in Boston?
Meek Mill should be buying a ticket on the floor tonight, watching his Sixers, and his guest should be Lamar Jackson.
Let's go.
Rich, meet Meek Mill. Meet Meek Mill at like camera one. Tell him.
Meek. SeatGeek, whatever, you know?
Hi, this is Meek for SeatGeek.
Honestly, just go right now, get two tickets. I think you know how to do it. You don't have to go on a secondary ticket market.
They'll
but
be
go
free,
on,
actually.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Get two seats, right courtside. There's Lamar. Hey, Patriot fans watching your Sixers and watching the Celtics.
Lose to the Sixers? Hey.
You just heard that Mac Jones might be on the market? Here I am in Boston. Boy, do I love this place. Shouldn't you love me? Get out there. All right, let's take a break. Good news update. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
Let's take a break. Ben Affleck, speaking of Boston, this movie Air is so good, and he's the director of it, and he plays Phil Knight in it. That's next. This is The Rich Eisen Show. It's that time of year, people. Spring has sprung, and that means spring cleaning, or at least the partner in your life is demanding that you do it. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip, that flight you've been eyeing, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta by using the code Eisen when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use my code EISEN. That's IBOTTA in the Google Play or App Store and use my code Eisen. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs, because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. The Rich Eisen Show Radio Network is back with the Roku channel stream. Sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger is the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. We have got a great conversation to get to, but our phone lines are lit. And understand, sit back and enjoy this chat that I had just recently with the director of Air, Ben Affleck. And joining me here now on the Rich Eisen Show is the Oscar-winning director of Air, exclusively in theaters globally on this coming Wednesday, April 5th. The man who also plays Phil Knight in this terrific film, Ben Affleck. How you doing, Ben?
Good. Nice to see you. Always a pleasure.
Good to see you, too. What attracted you to this film, the project?
I mean, you know, it was kind of a lot of things at once. I mean, first of all, obviously, I thought, you know, the story of what Michael Jordan kind of became and how he changed the sports world and the marketing world is one that I vividly remember. And I think is very interesting because it's really the beginning of a total transition from people into sort of brands and the different identity marketing and all this stuff that we kind of take for granted now. And I thought it was really interesting that at the time I wasn't quite aware that it wasn't taken for granted that Michael would be a great big star in the NBA or not to mention become, you know, the greatest of all professional basketball players. And that Nike was like, kind of, you know, in third place. They were in the, you know, in the outhouse there. They were like pulling up the caboose in the basketball market. They were kind of a Portland, you know, marathoning sort of slightly hippie alternative jogging company, but they weren't at all cool in the basketball world. And they certainly weren't what they later became. And I liked the underdog aspect of it. And ultimately I really liked the kind of that it could maybe be a kind of a fable. Like, you don't have to like basketball the whole thing. Like, if you like basketball and like sports, you should love it. And also it should feel universal. And it was a good opportunity for me to look selfishly, the kinds of movies I really like to make and I hope keep getting made are movies that are like about the characters and the writing and the acting and where people's, you know, move you or funny or interesting or surprise you. And that's, you know, that's in short supply now. The kind of conventional wisdom is that can't be out in theaters. So I was trying to make a movie that crowds would like, my friends would like, my kids would like, my mom would like, but that didn't feel compromised in any way.
Well, you stuck the landing on this one, man. I loved it. And and I was, you know, saying it earlier and I'll say it again now that I'm with you. It felt like 5 minutes long. It just breezed by. And then the best films where you already know the result, but still keep you on the edge of your seat. Like spoiler alert, I knew Nike was going to sign Jordan by the end.
You did know that the Air Jordan ended up being a thing. That was
You know what? I kind of knew that going in. But
you knew it panned out for him as a basketball player.
It's amazing how it all happened. But and interestingly enough, you know, we're talking right now. Mere hours after, let me do the math in my head, the 41st anniversary of him making the shot to beat Georgetown.
Nice.
And, you know, stand in Patrick Ewing's way for the first of about a dozen times in their career.
Which I remember Patrick Ewing, we put a little sort of Easter egg in it, went to my high school. That Matt and I went to. I wasn't old enough to be in high school, but everybody, you know, there, you know, knew, hey, Pat, you know, he lived down the street from us. He actually lived on Matt's street, which we kind of go to a little bit, obviously, great lengths at the end to sort of talk about unnecessarily. But it was, I remember that game because it was such a heartbreak because he, you know, the guy got tight and threw the ball to the player on the other team.
Yes.
And it was a big deal college game, even when we were young kids then.
Yeah, the Sleepy Floyd ending, but the fact that, you know, that play kind of put Jordan in the national consciousness, and that is so important for your film as well. And now here we are, you know, at Final Four time. It is a pretty neat sort of confluence of everything together, and the footage, seeing it in the film, is amazing. But that does bring me to my next question here: is you made clearly a conscious choice to not cast Michael Jordan is a character.
And why did you do that? We never see his face.
Yeah. Well, for a couple of reasons. One, it's I don't have the rights to make the Michael Jordan story. And the Michael Jordan, if you're going to convince somebody, if it's possible that you're going to be able to convince an audience that a different person than the Michael Jordan that everybody knows incredibly well because he's a kind of walking god on earth and a massive icon, you're going to have to get an actor like, you know, of the caliber of like, I mean, there are very few, Denzel and Malcolm X. When that movie ended and they showed Malcolm X, I was like, oh, that's right. Malcolm X didn't look like Denzel. You know, like I thought Denzel was Malcolm X. You need a whole movie. You need a lot of work and you need like, you know, a career performance from a genius. And this also, you need the rights to Michael's story. Part of what this is about, part of what this company Matt and I are doing is about is, you know, the people that and what Nike recognized in that deal. If you're going to create that kind of value, you should be compensated appropriately. You know, it's the shift from a kind of license fee to some ownership share. And that's why I thought like, A, no one's going to believe me that some actor shows up in the middle of the movie and I go, hey, there's Michael Jordan. It destroys the whole movie because all of a sudden everything else is bogus too, obviously. You know, it all just, these illusions, like making a movie, most of the work is sustaining the basic illusion that what you're watching is actually real and happening so that you invest yourself in it. That's the hardest part of it, to stop people from going, oh, I knew this would happen, or this is where this part, you know, where they disengage, but to actually connect them with people. And trying to sell anybody who's not Michael Jordan, the only person who could play it, the, you know, 23-year-old Michael Jordan turned 60 yesterday and I can't afford him. And that's.
But you did need said Michael's blessing, correct? You had to.
I don't think the lawyers or anybody thought that, like, because he's not in it. And because I think, you know, as I can tell you, like when you're a public figure and I'm not of the not approaching close to Jordan public figure status. Nonetheless, there are like your people are allowed to write things and say things and tell stories about you because you're considered to be kind of in the public sphere, the public domain, or the, you know, whatever the law is regarding that. It gives people some latitude to, you know, fair use and talk about your story. The truth of it was I wasn't going to make the movie without knowing and first of all saying, hey, Michael, if you don't want this movie made, period, no matter what, like I'm just done. Forget it. I don't need to do it. I don't for out of respect for you and who you are and what you mean. And out of the simple, basic instinct of self-preservation, like the stupidest thing in the world would be to go out and make a movie, which, you know, then Michael later discovers is being made and says like, this is an outrage, get rid of this thing. Well, you know, that's just suicide. And so I just, but I also was mindful that like we weren't paying him. This wasn't the Michael Jordan story. And so I didn't want to ask of him anything in terms of, hey, you know, give me a work with me, give me research, blah, 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 you know, promote the movie. Like I, you know, I said, listen, I don't have to, you know, all I want you to know is if you tell me to not, to just walk away and drop it, I will. And because I have to, and I was lucky to get him to sit down with me for an hour, frankly. And I said, look, if you, I need to compress this, I need to change details. When you tell a true story, a story inspired by true events, it's in a less than 2 hours, you know, part of the function of telling that story is maintaining the essence of the truth, but it's not the literal truth. And everyone didn't say exactly those things, et cetera. You take liberties, but Michael, I won't, you know, I want to know what things are fundamentally important to you, where if they're truths that are violated, it just doesn't work for you. And it was a very, I think, tellingly, his only concerns were about others' inclusion in the story. It was like, Howard White should not be left out. It's an extremely important figure in this deal, an ongoing relationship, lifelong relationship with Nike. Howard, of course, is still there. Jordan Brand, vice president. George Raveling, deal wouldn't happen without George Raveling. That was good for me to know because this was after the Olympics that this story takes place. George Raveling was the assistant coach of Bobby Knight on the Olympic team. For those of you who want to see on YouTube, there's a really great Bobby Knight talking about saying it then before he went to the pros, this is the best basketball player that's ever
that he's ever seen. And I've seen that where he says in terms of being impressive. A competitor, athletic, he called it before he even
really
played
called it. And by the way, like actually later on after the movie, what I found out, I saw an article in Forbes magazine in 1984 that said, if you need look no further for evidence that Nike has completely lost its way than the fact that they paid $250,000 to an untested Michael Jordan who's never played a day of professional basketball. That exists. $250,000.
That's a cold take. That's a cold take. Didn't last. Didn't age well.
Forbes was wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway, and Michael also talked about, his few things were also he talked about his parent. As I was, obviously if you don't want your parents to appear in it, I could, out of respect, I knew his father passed away, and I wanted to be respectful of his family. And I said, is there anything that you'd like to include? You wouldn't like to be included? I just am not going to talk about this at all in any way other than the way that's respectful.
Right.
And he, he had a lovely, obvious affection for his dad. He said he had the best personality of anyone he ever knew. And they talked quite reverentially about his mother and her role, which I hadn't known about entirely. And instantly when he told me that, I thought this changes the whole movie. I'm going to reconstruct this whole story to reflect the fact that at 59 years old, this is what Michael remembers about this incident and the person that he wants to, pay homage to. And then he told me I had to get Viola Davis. So it was quite clear that I was like, yep. And that's like saying you can start a basketball team if you had to get Michael Jordan. But it meant that I had to, come up with something that was worthy of Viola Davis. And it was kind of, in a way, probably typical Michael Jordan, we'll just get the very best. You know what I mean? The absolute greatest ever. Terrific. No problem.
That's right. So where did that take place? Did you, you didn't.
I told him I would maintain the confidentiality. I went and met him at a place we met and went to him to where he's near where he lives.
You didn't just show up at his house like Sonny McCarthy.
I didn't cold call him. I know. I said, where would you like me to come? And I will come there anywhere in the world.
Right.
And he said, this is where I am and meet me down the road. And I said, okay, great. And I was really grateful and really just grateful and happy that he was willing to take the time and sit down with me and have a conversation because he didn't have to at all. And I know he's famously a guy who guards his private time and his private life.
Well, and Ben Affleck here on the Rich Eisen Show, and obviously you've been there, done that. You've been around this city, and obviously you've been around sports, and you've combined them both before in other films. You're friendly with Brady. I mean, what was it like meeting with him? Just to linger on Jordan. I mean, what was that?
I had met Michael a few other times.
Okay.
Sort of at events and around. So I knew him a little bit. He's my buddy. I totally idolized the guy and hero worship him and would meet him and try to act cool and then be like, look at Michael. And this was very much like that. He's a extraordinary, incredible presence. And an incredible, very deep, powerful voice, speaking voice.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because I watched a Letterman interview from his second year in the NBA, I think it was, and where they talk about some of the events in the movie, in particular about the NBA's approach to the shoe. And he doesn't. It's really fascinating how much he seemed to kind of grow into that icon status thing, because now to meet him is to really experience in a way. And I've met a lot of famous people and whatever, and I would say he's the most personally impressive person I've ever met. He just kind of exudes a power and a strength and a kind of force and a determination and a confidence that are self-evident, and you meet the guy and you think this is a person to be respected and taken very seriously. That was my approach. And I was thrilled. He was kind. He was nice. He was friendly. And I was flattered.
No, I'm glad he said yes. So in the few minutes I have left with you, how did you prepare as if you didn't have enough to bite off directing this and meeting with Jordan and helping make it happen? How did you prepare for Phil Knight playing another icon?
Interestingly, the Jordan meeting, although brief, actually was the catalyst for what ended up being a very, laborious reconstruction of the movie in many ways. The Phil, there was, and no one was playing Mike, which I, as I said, I think would be impossible. With Phil, it was kind of like, you know, I didn't want to try to SNL, you know, where I get the exact, you know, mimic the look and the, you know, and try to, I wanted to sort of capture the spirit, but Jason Bateman doesn't look a lot like Rob Strasser and Chris Messina doesn't look like David Falk. And, yes. you know, but I knew that Phil's is famous and well-known and his hair actually was a little more blonde than I did the, but I wanted it to sort of not be like, I had a blonde wig in the last duel and that was the only thing that anybody seemed to talk about. So I was like, maybe I won't do that this time. Maybe I'll do a less distracting move. And I really was interested and drawn to the fact that like, Phil's a very complex guy. He built this huge company. He's this massive titan of industry. He real like revolutionary and sort of pirate. And then he became like a steward of the ship. And that's an interesting thing. And also just being like a Buddhist and a massive capitalist are odd things that are in contrast with one another. And I thought, and the truth is you have to have somebody in the story, like the true story of this deal, I'm sure is much more nuanced and probably a little more boring and a lot of conference rooms and discussions about it. But the you have to have somebody who has some resistance to the protagonist's, you know, movement forward. And also the truth is like people love to make fun of the boss. You know, like in my experience, you know, that's just how we are. And I thought this is a guy who would both get a lot of respect for what he'd done. But also you could see people working with him going like, this guy's going to preach to me about Buddhism now and lecture me about, you know, and give that kind of energy and tenor and spirit to what I thought it felt like Nike might have been at that time, which is a sort of scrappy place with a bunch of people trying to sort of change the rules. And, you know, they had a philosophy. Companies didn't have philosophies. Companies, their philosophy was like, you know, punch the clock and make a profit. It wasn't like you went down to the tire factory and was like, but what's your mission statement? You know, and now this is the era of the modern corporation is like, whether they do or don't have, you know, philosophies, they all have consultants who say, here's what we think works as a mission statement, you know, and Phil kind of was an early pioneer in that. And so I tried to play him in a kind of funny, appealing and tip the hat to the significance of the decision he made. And also a guy who could, like, I hoped, you know, take a joke, which it turned out he could.
It's amazing. Last two for you here, Ben Affleck. It's great also to see you and Matt on the screen together doing your thing. So it begs the question, have you ever had the opportunity to do a sequel to Good Will Hunting? Have you ever had the offer to do that?
It's been explored. People have inquired. I don't have an idea that I think is good enough to, I don't know what that would be. It just seems like that movie is sort of what it is. And it would feel like a kind of, you know, cash grab trivialization of a movie that is like of the few that are important to me. I really love, I like one of the few movies I want my kids to see, you know, it's there are things about it that now feel a little bit like, yeah, that was the 90s, you know, but mm-hmm. I still love the movie. You know, it's in that movie is a spirit of me and Matt as kids and trying to grow up, become young men and figure the world out. And it's like a lovely thing, nostalgic thing for me now. So it's not like I'm gonna, you know, I want to have Will now, like, you know, he works at NASA and he's, you know, hacking into the Chinese database and or whatever, you know.
So he would be like Bourne. You'd turn him into Jason.
Actually Jason kind of is Jason Bourne now that I think about it. He just forgot that he grew up in South Boston. Yeah.
And mixed it all together. And then last one for you, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, spoiler alert, you're in the public eye. And to just, you know, mix it all together with your film about a star athlete having his mother acting as an advocate for him. Lamar Jackson is currently out there right now looking maybe for another team. His mother is apparently his agent. And then in the meantime, he's been, you know, hearing all sorts of things about him that's not true on social media. Did you see that he used you as a meme on his Twitter account,
Ben Affleck? I didn't.
Talk to you. He said it's like he was talking about how you need mental health awareness. And then he put you in his jersey caught smoking outside of a outside, you know, this famous photograph of you looking.
That is a lovely. And I wish it were I weren't smoking because I don't really want to promote that awful foul habit. However, my daughter told me, who's now 17 years old.
Yes.
She said, Dad, you know, I think your real lasting cultural contribution will be as representative of the beleaguered man. I don't think the beleaguered man needs a representative, but now they have one. I think, like, well, it's interesting because it's like, yes, I have kind of like, I don't even remember what that was, just like a moment. I was kind of like, oh, I'm tired. But it becomes like a, and by the way, I'm sure that the point he's trying to make,
yes,
would be my guess, is like, life is hard for all of us.
Yes.
It is a difficult thing to navigate. And we all can feel, I don't even know the details of what's going on. I don't right. try to defend or advocate, but yes. my guess, my hope is that he's saying, like, life's not easy. And it's not a, and it can be hard no matter who you are. And, you know, sort of like be a little more compassionate. And if that is in fact his message, then I wholeheartedly concur. And there are a host of other beleaguered man, which he's welcome to use.
You look good in a Ravens uniform, though. I don't know if you ever thought you'd look good in a Ravens uniform, but
having met Ray Lewis, I'll tell you what I actually, if I was standing next to another Raven, I think I would not look quite so good. It's like this, those, some of those, right. you see guys in the NFL who are built in a way that is just, you know, it's a whole other level.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hey, congrats on Air. Ben, it really is a fantastic movie. I could not, speaking of advocating, I couldn't advocate for more people to see it. It's really awesome. And I'm going to show it to my kids. As you pointed out, you want to show your kids. My kids only know of Jordan as the shoe guy. That's the way it is in this world, man. You know, in the same way did John Madden as the video game guy for a whole generation.
Yeah, Madden is like, they think he wrote the code. Yeah, the football game.
You know he's the algorithm guy, you know. Yeah. But it tells a full and complete story, and it's awesome. It's fun. You're fun in it, and it's great.
I appreciate it, man.
And I thank you for taking the time here to come.
Always a pleasure to talk to my man. I appreciate you.
Right back at you, Ben Affleck. Thanks again.
All right.
That's Ben Affleck right here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Fun stuff. The beleaguered man. That's funny.
You're Ben Affleck's man.
Sonny Vaccaro is on tomorrow's show in studio. Yeah. That's on Wednesday, though. We'll wrap up this Tuesday show with your phone calls, 844-204-RICH, in a moment. Let's talk Sleep Number, people, because quality sleep is so essential. That's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, and the same thing for your partner, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side, helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature, quiets your snores or your partner's? Sleep Number does that. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. 10 numbers apart, but it truly is the world of difference. The Sleep Number sleep that you get is unbelievable. You will love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now you could save 50%. That's 50%. On the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Terzo in Iowa has been hanging on forever. What's up? All rise, Terzo. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Rich. Good show today, man. I've really enjoyed listening. Hey, Rich, I do know kind of the same competitiveness that you got going on with Susie. My mom was the exact same way.
Oh, yeah?
She and my grandma would definitely, while I learned how to play cards, they would take my chip and they'd take my chair, and I'd have to go soak in the corner until I learned how to come back and beat them. And I'll tell you this, my competitive edge wouldn't be what it is without those ladies.
Ah.
And so that's something I have a ton of respect for.
Okay. Did you ever wave your hand in front of your face, in front of your grandmother, say, you can't see me? Did you ever do that?
Well, the bad part is once you got glaucoma, it wasn't funny.
Oh, but, boy.
We definitely...
Dude, why'd you go dark on me like that?
Oh, my God.
I'll
be honest. I would run my grandma or my mom over with a with the train to win a board game of Monopoly. I'm not joking. We it was always competitive.
This guy, what's going on with you? What else is happening? What's on your mind, Terzo? What's up?
Well, I just, you know, I really loved what we had with the NCAA, with the men's, just being completely out of the blue with who we had in the Final Four. Shout out to Seton's wife for picking those four. That's unbelievable.
Unreal.
And then the great competitiveness of the women's. I thought those games were so much fun. You know, we left the D&D movie Friday night just to rush to go watch the women's game, and that's one of the coolest things that I got to experience. That's why I'm just a little disappointed with how people reacted to what went on at the end of that game.
I hear you.
Quit taking away from the great narrative that these women built up. They did a great job. It built the game bigger than it's been, and don't take away from that.
Thanks for the call.
They don't deserve that.
Thanks for the call, Terzo. Appreciate you hanging on as long as possible, and one of our favorites.
Terzo.
You know, sometimes you ask somebody, like, how you doing? If somebody asks you that, and you actually, well, listen.
I do that all the time. The doctor said anything about me.
Jimmy in San Antonio. How you doing, Jimmy?
Jimmy! Buenos dias, amigos y señora.
Oh, hello.
What's going on, Jimmy? Señor is you, Susie.
Give my best to Amy Trask, por favor.
Jimmy, I'm having her back. She's coming back in to be on the show the 25th.
Okay, the 26th. Yeah. You're on 26th, yes. Yeah.
26th, Jimmy, I hope you'll be happy.
My calendar.
Great.
That's awesome. I have a few quick questions for you and Susie.
Okay.
And y'all can answer yes or no at the same time.
Oh,
I like these.
Wow, it's like the new.
I want to go first.
Whoops. He said at the same time.
Yeah, that's how this works, Zeus.
See what happens when HR is boozing it up in the fairway?
That's right. HR is not here today. Okay.
Okay. Is Rich jealous of Brady the dog?
No.
Okay. Does Rich wish he was named Namath?
Huh.
Instead of Brady. I thought Joe Namath.
Oh, the dog. Because we share a mutual love of Tom Brady.
Tom Brady's a goat, man.
Yeah.
This one just happens to be the goat of Great Pyrenees. So.
Okay, that was a foul. That was
it's okay.
Horrible.
You can't hit foul. You can't hit 1,000. It's okay, Jimmy.
No.
Do you got any more?
On the drive to work, was it separate on purpose via Mr. and Mrs. Smith style?
No. Because we're picking up, you've got to go pick up our oldest.
We're picking up, I have a pickup at the airport. I'm also an Uber driver in case
you didn't know. Yeah, that's why.
5-star rating.
That's why.
Okay, 0 for 2.
Jimmy in San Antonio.
Don't worry about it.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Jimmy. You're the
man. That's it, Jimmy?
That's it. Jimmy's out. Jimmy out.
I got time.
Jimmy's out.
Jimmy.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Fun show. Funny show.
Funny show.
That was a fun show. I want to thank today's guests. It was fun with Ben Affleck and also Brian Windhorst dropping knowledge.
Yeah.
Tonight's Celtics-Sixers game in Philadelphia. I want to see Meek Mill courtside with Lamar Jackson just to wave to all the Celtics fans who've traveled to Philadelphia and everybody watching at home.
And RKK.
Correct.
That would be so
RKK
scandalous.
Might even be there because, you know, Meek might have to tell RKK, not coming. We were going to go together. Plus one's now Lamar Jackson.
What if in the top of the second quarter, RKK replaces Meek Mills in the chairs?
Or
Meek
Mill, right, brings RKK and then middle of the first quarter says, I got to hit the men's room.
Right.
Gets
Lamar
up,
comes
puts
comes
Lamar in.
In
there, and he ghosts,
so
and he's out.
See,
and
they
as Lamar
should hire
sitting
us.
Next to Bob Kraft for the whole game.
This should be a Rich Eisen show, Enterprises.
This is that's right. RES Consulting.
Consulting.
We haven't consulted in a minute.
We haven't consulted in a minute. We got to dust that one off.
Agents also.
Good stuff.
We're agents.
All right.
Sports agents.
And I want to thank also Jay Billis. First guy to ever hit a golf shot during an interview in the history of the Rich Eisen Show. And Aaron Sheehan, who's got to ask Dan Patrick for $8 million.